closer.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
Hello, how are you? This is the Disciplined Investor Podcast. If you happen along and you were thinking maybe this was a podcast about, I don't know, iPhone apps or the weekend magic or the daily five spiritual, well, you came to the wrong place. The right place, it's about investments. We're here talking about all things that really relate to you, your money, finances, trying to make sure that you're on track. We do it as a team. We do it as a concerted effort to make sure that you're safe and you're using disciplines, core disciplines. This is your host, Andrew Horowitz, and thank you so much for joining me today. Thank you so much for your support. Thanks so much for all your great email, and I really appreciate the camaraderie that we've really made here over the last year and a half in this kind of one way it could be really one-sided, but it's turned out to be a two-sided friendship where not only are we hopefully giving a lot to each other, and I get a lot from your email, your commentary, and your calls, but also hopefully you're saving some money and making some money. Right now, it's the middle of October 2008, and if I didn't know any better, any one day that we have seen in the last week of trading could have been the equivalent of an entire year's worth of trading on the Dow Jones, S&P 500, NASDAQ, or any index you want to look at. I find it absolutely, I walk around saying, oh my God, and this isn't funny, and how is that happening, or is that right? All the time. I mean, I look at these numbers and I see the Dow is up, let's say, up 400 points for the day, and then it swings down to 150 point loss. Or maybe the S&P 500 is doing, you know, 150 or 200 point swing on a daily basis, weekly basis. Doesn't even matter. I mean, we saw NASDAQ hitting some record numbers. Volatility, the VIX is up to a dramatic. I mean, last week was the highest it ever registered, ever. Since it has been tracked, the volatility index that is tracked by the CBOE, the Chicago Board of Options Exchange, was at a record high last week, and it only dropped down just slightly because we're finding that the credit is still really constrained and investors are panicking, and obviously with good reason. But really the question right now is, what are we going to do about it? You know, what have you done about it? Have you used sell stops? Have you used hedges? Have you used the disciplines that we talk about? And if not, it's not too late. I'm telling you, it isn't too late. I think I told you last week that there was someone came in my office and we looked at their portfolio. They had a 401k, young people, and they lost about 40 to 50%. The question I have is, what are we going to do about it moving forward? Are you going to maybe, you know, just say, okay, you know, that's what we have available in our 401k. That's the mutual funds. Or maybe write to your HR department and tell them, listen, we need alternatives. We need to have some market neutral and even maybe market negative inverse ETFs or mutual funds inside of our choices. Because you know what? No matter what the diversification was that we utilized for the most part, unless I was in maybe all cash if you're smart enough to do that, it really was a problem. So here's what we're going to do today. I thought what we'd do is we would bring on somebody because I've been watching these social networking sites, these investor-based social networking sites like SocialPix and Marketocracy and Covestor. We've had Covestor on before, the CEO of Covestor. And I thought what we'd do is we'd go a little bit different today, and we'll bring on Doug Doyle. He'll be on in a moment. We'll get him on the line. And he's with Inner8. And I'm not gonna pull any punches, and I'm not gonna hold back anything, I should say, because I really do have some, you know, concerns about how these are run. We'll see if his is a little bit different. It is, from what I've seen, and that's why I bring him on, it is a little bit different. And then what we're going to do is I'll give you some things that we're doing right now, some stock tips. I got to tell you, there are some real bargains out there, and I think you may be surprised with some of the things I'm going to tell you. So we'll pick that up right on the backside of this discussion. And again, I want to mention to you, very important though right now, that we're going to have a cocktail party. I've only gotten about, although I haven't seen my mail in the last couple of days because I've been so snowed under. I spent the last 4 hours looking at charts and stocks like nonstop. My eyes are bleary, to be honest with you. But I think I have a couple of good ideas for you, especially into earnings next week. It's a big week of earnings. But that's what I do. And that's what you have to do to be successful in this. Right now, I'm still in first place as the end of the week right now. Into the final weeks of October, still in first place at the Strategy Lab for MSN Money. Last week had a rough week. I was down about 2%. I entered a position. I'll tell you, you got to hear this. This is unbelievable what happened. It was the middle of the week, and I decided that I wanted to start moving back into some long positions. In our managed growth strategy, we had picked up a couple of long positions at a very low price, and I thought it was a great time to start doing it. Now, what's interesting about the MSN Strategy Lab is I have to put all my trades in along with a journal at 6 p.m. in the evening. Okay, so that means I have to kind of hope that nothing happens overnight really bizarre. So what I try to do is I try to say, okay, I'm not going to buy on the open. Never buy. Listen, if I never said this to you before, never buy on the open. There's oftentimes, particularly now, order imbalances and inequities in terms of pricing on the open. Everybody is out there trying to buy on the open. Don't do it. Wait a few minutes after the open, maybe 9:45 towards 10, maybe even after 10 o'clock at a minimum if there's an economic release coming out. So what I try to do is I try to buy after the open and try to say, okay, looking forward, I know I can't get out to the following day because I can't put another trade ledger in and a journal till the following day up until 6 o'clock that will be acted upon the next day. So I kind of have to be investing with a 2-day horizon. Now, right now, that may sound kind of ridiculous. Actually, in some circumstances in the past, that may sound ridiculous, right? 2 days, what is he worried about? But right now, I'm worried about 2 minutes. I want to make sure that we're not going to get just sideswiped by something. So we developed a list of things we were buying as well as putting in some hedges on those. And I submitted them with the journal. It was about 6 p.m. in the evening. At 6:30, I started sweating. And I started saying, I can't do this. I can't put these trades in. So I called up my contact over at MSN at Microsoft. And I said, you know, do me a favor. It was right close to six. It wasn't published yet. And I said, do me a favor, please. Some of those positions I needed to pull back. Now, we kept the positions, but instead of, let's say, buying 200 shares, we bought 100 shares. And I'll tell you something. Obviously, you know, even though all the research in the world is pointing me into certain directions, right now the market is so different than it's ever been. You have to use a little bit more, not only discipline, but you have to use a little bit more common sense, I think, right now, that if there is this excess volatility, you have to be careful. I even opened up my sell stops from what was usually 8, then I moved it to 10, now I moved it to 12, and still I was hit on 2 of the sell stops last week. So, you know, unfortunately, we moved down about 2%, we're down about 4%, or I think 4.25% since the inception. The S&P is down about, I think it's close to 30 or 28%, I think it is right now. We posted that on the website over at the Disciplined Investor, and I posted the total performance and all that. But I find it very interesting that we see such such volatility. Those portfolios at MSN have wild volatility. Vod, the last year's winner of the amateur from last year, he was down about 30%. Now he's down about 11 or 12%. The amateur from this year was up about 7%, and I'm not sure why he didn't actually cut his positions, but now he's down about 6%. And, you know, that's what's happening on a daily basis. We're seeing these kind of wild moves. But the reason why my portfolio is number one, no question about it, even though I had this loss last week and with the volatility, is because of the sell stops. We say 40 and 50 points on Mosaic and Potash. And I can give you a long list of things that would have been disastrous if we didn't have automatic sell stops on that portfolio. So what I did was when I designed how we're going to manage that portfolio, I felt that we had to use some things that maybe I wouldn't do in real life because we can have greater access. But what you probably have to do if you're working and you can't keep on top of the markets all the time is probably how I manage my portfolio at the Strategy Lab. I really can't get to it all the time. I really don't have access like you may not. So what are you going to do to make sure you have protection? Don't use mutual funds. Mutual funds you can't trade till 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Use ETFs instead. Use individual stocks, maybe. Use closed-end funds, maybe. But mutual funds right now are not going to give you the benefit of allowing you to get in or get out if you need be, and you can't have any sell stops on there. So whatever happens during the day, that's what happens. Anyway, with all that in mind, I encourage you to look over at the MSN Strategy Lab to see what's going on over there. But I'll also mention to you that coming up next month, November, I believe it's November 7th in Washington, D.C., I'll be speaking on 2 different panels on Friday. I believe that is the 8th. Thursday night, the night before, though, I am having a cocktail party. Just a small little gathering. Anybody that wants to come, please do me a favor. I'd like you to write in. Just send a note to us at askandrew@thedisciplinedinvestor.com, whether you're from Connecticut or, you know, the D.C. area, or whether you're from New York or any, you know, Virginia, wherever the area is, I'd love for you to come down. I'm going to give out a free book to anybody that does come. We'll do a little signing there, have a couple of drinks and talk about stocks. I'll be there to ask your questions, give you a quick presentation on what's going on currently. Be very informal, but I think it'll be a lot of fun. So do me a favor. We want to have, I know that's kind of hard because people are listening from all over the world, frankly. So it's a little bit hard to pinpoint any particular area that we're going to have this, but we'll probably have a small group, a dozen or so, two dozen people, I would imagine. But do that right now, because if we don't get that many people, to be honest with you, because of area issues, you know, in terms of proximity, we'll just make sure we cut it and figure out something else to do. So write to askandrew@thedisciplinedinvestor.com. And now what we're going to do is we're going to kick it off with Doug Doyle in a moment after we just talk about Audible, because Audible is sponsoring this episode. You know, Audible is a great, you know, if you haven't tried Audible and you like podcasting, you know, what you're going to find is that it's very similar. What you do is, I mean, simple, right? You just go to Audible, you sign up, and really, I mean, there's like 35,000 titles you can choose from, and you can download them to your iPhone or your MP3 player. You can listen to them on your computer. And, you know, you whether you want to buy my book, by the way, and you can get a free offer, which I'll tell you how to do that in a second, or you want to pick up a fiction book or another book on investing. What a great way, because when you're doing something where you don't have the opportunity to read, you know, from physically reading, well, what's the next best thing? Well, you could put headphones on, if you will, and just listen. And some of these, if you've never heard some of these readers, you know, they're professional. Forget about my book. I did my book. But when you listen to some of them, it's like, really, they put such spirit into it. It's amazing. So what you have to do is, it's pretty simple, because you can actually go and get a free trial if you haven't done so. And what you do is you go to audiblepodcast.com/investor. And what you do is you can sign on, you get a free audio book from Audible, any one of your choice. You can sign up. And then basically you have 2 weeks to cancel it. And just go to, very simple, audiblepodcast.com/investor. And once you do that, you get this free book, you sign on, you can like get a book every month if you want, or choose what program you want. But again, if you don't want it, you could always cancel it. And I encourage you to do so, because they seem to track how many people go there and sign up from here to see if they're going to continue sponsoring the program. So if nothing else, as a good idea, if you want to keep a sponsorship on this program, which I'd be very happy with, we do a lot of work to bring this to you, let's go there. Again, it's audiblepodcast.com/investor. When we get back, we're going to talk about social investing with Doug Doyle, who is the CEO of Inner8. So stick around. We'll be right back on the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This is Brian Shackman from CNBC, and you're listening to the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
Okay, and promised, you know, one of the things that I think that we all need today is a little bit of, I don't know, some camaraderie, some little bit of, you know, kind of who else is out there that, you know, is going through this, because it's, I got to tell you something, and you know this down deep, you're not alone. You know, there's a lot of people that are going through this very difficult market condition. So I thought what we'd do is bring on somebody today. His name is Doug Doyle. He is the CEO of Inner8, and it is, I'll let him introduce us a little bit better, but basically Inner8 is a platform where there are a lot of investors that are sharing ideas, and there's a couple of different sites like this. I think there's, Doug? Hi, Doug. Hello, by the way.
Hi. Hi there, Andrew.
So there's a couple.
I'm here too.
There's a couple different sites like this. I mean, there's, I guess, Marketocracy is similar, maybe a little bit, where you have people that are not professionals that are giving in, you know, kind of a coordinated information, and you're graded on how good you do. And I think
that's
there's right. Covestor right. That may Covestor is a little bit different, maybe, because Covestor is more of like a scorecard, right?
It's more of a scorecard. Yeah, Marketocracy is more like a mutual fund run by a bunch of people acting as a virtual manager.
Right. Which, by the way, Ken Kam, who is the, I guess he's the founder of Marketocracy.
Yeah.
He's one of the guys on my strategy lab. He's competing against me on the strategy lab right now.
Right. But so Ken's great. I like listening to him.
He's good stuff. He likes Elan. He likes that
right.
stock. Oh, boy. Anyway, so what's interesting is, and we've talked a little bit, Doug and I, and I have mixed emotions about some of this, and I kind of, you know, was hoping to maybe Doug can give me some clarification. So do me a favor.
Bring it on.
Here we go, buddy.
Yeah, all right. The gloves are off.
Yeah. No, but tell me this. Just give me the real quick pitch on what it is that really is the passion, you know, that you do on your site and on your, you know, business model, and what's it all about, and what can an average investor or an unaverage investor really get out of it?
Sure. What we're passionate about is investors just making the right decisions. And, you know, you can look at some of the statistics that are out there on how people get their financial advice. And a lot of times they pay a lot for financial advice that doesn't always give them value. Sometimes it's just better to put your money in the indexes. Mm-hmm. And in fact, there's a lot of statistics that say managed portfolios, and I'm talking about the mass affluent. I'm not talking about people with, you know, they're sophisticated enough to have hedge funds and things like that. I'm talking about, I think last night there was Joe the Plumber was on, or the other night.
Yeah, he's getting a lot of attention, isn't he?
Poor Joe. And he's a real guy.
I understand. Poor guy. At first, I didn't think he was, and then the face showed up. I'm like, who's that?
Yeah,
that's
Joe. He's a real guy. But the people who have, let's say, $100,000 or in that area of investable assets, they're paying $2,000, $3,000 a year to have an advisor advise them, and they seem to be underperforming. So our passion is getting the least professional way I could say it is annoyed, and then seeing a business opportunity is a more professional way of saying it. But we really do get emotional about it, just seeing people spend that kind of money. And we realize that industry is ripe for a shift, that there are people out there who just like they don't use travel agents anymore, just like they don't use booksellers, they've shifted to an online way of doing things. In fact, for Gen Xers and Gen Yers, there's no other possible way to do it. I mean, they don't even know what a travel agent really is.
Mm-hmm.
So we see an opportunity to take some of the social things that are out there, and we can jump into that in a minute, but also analytics that we have, and I'll talk about that, and people cooperating with each other. And we see if you could mix that together, you could mimic and probably even create a superior experience for some people to what they could buy today for that high price.
So
it's a better experience we think we can offer.
So I told, by the way, about, I think, two podcasts ago, I got a little bit riled, and I think what came out of my mouth several times was fire your advisor. You know, if they haven't told you to hedge, if they haven't told you to pull out, if they haven't told you anything more than any of the implications of simply don't worry about it, everything's going to be okay, buy low, sell high, blah, 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 time in, not time out, market timing doesn't work, all these wonderful phrases that we've heard over the years that would have ended up, which has allowed people the wonderful opportunity to lose 30% in the recent market puke, okay, that happened recently. But what, and I agree with you, so we're on the same page with that, by the way. I think there is a lot of mediocrity, and a tremendous amount of mediocrity out there when it comes to advisors.
Mm-hmm.
And advisors come in all different shapes and flavors and ways of doing things. And I agree with you, by the way, there is a significant difference from, how about this, ready? Joe Advisor. Okay.
Joe the Advisor.
Joe the Advisor, okay. Versus maybe, you know, Joe the Hedge Fund or Joe the Private Account Management. There's a difference there, right? Wouldn't you agree with that?
Different product.
Okay, different product.
Totally different product.
Unfortunately, for the most part, Joe the Advisor gives very vanilla, very S&P 500-like advice to to Joe the Investor, because that's all they're really equipped to handle for a variety of reasons. Number one, let me share this and tell me what you think about this. It is extraordinarily expensive to have data, to have packages, to do portfolio management, trading platforms, exception reporting platforms, you know, everything that's involved. As a matter of fact, I was just last night, we were looking at a brand new package for portfolio management. Do you know how much it was for a two-user, just two users? You know, we have a lot of people that would be using two. How much it is?
A couple thousand a seat.
It was $45,000 front end for the first seat. Then it was another, right, the Bloomberg is $2,000 a month per seat.
$1,800
per month with a two-year contract. But this was just a portfolio management system with a trade order routing management system, was $45,000 plus another, take 15 grand. So it was like 60 grand. Now, who's going to afford 60 grand? So that's, first of all, where the expense goes to the advisor. Not defending them, but I'm just saying that is one thing. But there's an incredible amount of expense involved in getting the data. There's a lot of free stuff out there. But, you know, how do you then translate that into the average? And let's just keep using this Joe the investor discussion, okay? How does Joe the investor, who uses, you know, Inner Eight, get data that is superior to what everybody else has? Or do they even need to?
Well, just Joe the advisor, to make his or her margins work, has to spend as little time as possible on each individual customer.
Clearly.
I think so.
I agree with you. I disagree. Yeah.
So really what we think is needed and given, by the way, to people who can afford it but not to people who can't, is this notion of matching, this notion of appropriateness of the investment. And one of the things, if you and I were in an elevator and I had to do the classic elevator pitch, I'd say we're Match.com for investors.
Mm-hmm.
And the analogy I was using with a friend recently was, imagine if Match.com or what are these other dating sites out there, imagine if they had, you paid your money and you were given a ranking of people that went from the, I don't know, just pick an attribute, their zip code, how close they are to you or how good looking they are, or just some ranking that just gave you a long list, and it was up to you to pick from that list who was the right mate for you. That's ludicrous. It's just like nuts. And you want to know where my passion is? It's because those social sites that are out there, the Covestors, all these, anybody that's out in this space that we're being put into, make the assumption that the portfolio with the highest ROI or the stock with the A++ rating is the one that you ought to look at. And to me, that's nonsense, because everybody's different. Everybody has different tolerance for risk. They have different time horizons. We're all different people, and that requires matching, requires appropriateness of the investment. And if you look at the competition that's out there, and it's why we thought that this business made sense, it's completely absent from the space. It's up to you, the user, to figure out what's for you. And the only way they rank it, the only way they help you out, is by saying, this portfolio has higher ROI. And then you end up in a world where luck, Hail Mary plays, penny stocks, if you and I made enough separate portfolios and put penny stocks in all different ones of them, mathematically some of them are going to have 1,000% ROIs. And to me, that's useless information.
Okay, so by the way, ROI is return on investment, just as a point of reference, and that's, kind of the that's how people, what is the S&P up
ROI,
and down?
You're right. Cut ROI and paste return or just, how the portfolio is doing.
Okay, so let's get about a little deeper. So who am I being matched to? I'm matched to you. Hey, you and I are now matched because whatever happens.
Okay,
so what happens?
So if you sign up, if you sign up to our site, you go through a brief process, which is not unlike the one you'd have with an investment advisor, and we ask you 45 questions, and some of them are easy to answer just by using our slider bars of, risk tolerance, things like that. You go through this process, and we capture 45 data points on you, and that list, by the way, is growing fast. Our site is out only in beta right now. And then that is used by our analytics to match you with people that are appropriate. And we match four ways. We match people to people, so there's a part of our site, and since this is a podcast, it's hard for me to show you what I'm talking about, but there's a part of our site in our community page that allows you to match people to people. You can find like-minded investors. So once you've put your portfolio information in there, you can find people that think like you, and you can see what stocks they're tracking, and you can reach out to them in an experience that feels kind of like LinkedIn and find out what their opinions are on specific stocks you have in mind that maybe they don't have an opinion on. And you can send them, it's a sort of kind of in-mail that you can send them. The second way we match is stocks to stocks. So if there's a particular stock that you want to follow and you want to find stocks that are correlated, and we have analytics that look at years of price history and find stocks that move in a correlated way with those stocks. And sometimes you can find really surprising correlations. So that's the second way we match. So you can start with a stock. We can match market conditions to stocks. So you can indicate, again using our slider bars, your bullish or bearishness in 10 different sectors of the economy, materials, technology, energy, things like that. And we give you a ranked list, and it's forward-looking. These are the stocks that are likely, very highly likely, we give you the actual correlation, 97% likely, to move if market conditions move the way you think they are, the way you set them up in that page. And again, it's difficult to use to describe in words, but that's how it works. So you can see I'm very bullish in technology. In fact, I did it this morning. I said I was bullish in technology and I was bullish in energy. And I wanted to see what came up. And the stock that came up pretty quickly was Garmin. And I thought, okay, that kind of makes sense because Garmin is a technology stock, but look what happens when people in fleets and others try to save money. They put these machines, you know, they put Garmin devices in the fleets and consumers start to buy them to make fewer wrong
but
turns.
But that's to pull up a stock. That's to pull up a stock, right? That's to pull up a stock, right? So you're finding that kind of information. So
that's market conditions of stocks.
Right.
So we're matching your belief in market conditions and we give you specific stocks. And the fourth way we match, just to finish the thought, is people to stocks. Once you've put in your sense of who you are, we've captured that information, we'll give you, it's three at a time, we give you three stocks that are appropriate for you to look at. They're appropriate along the, we've taken into account community sentiment, we've factored in your, you know, what's appropriate for you, and of course market conditions. And we give you three specific ideas to act upon. So there's a lot of ways to triangulate in and get ideas, check your assumptions. One of the things we're going to do very soon, it's not here yet, is you'll be able to take your own portfolio and diagnose it. And we'll tell you if you speak with forked tongue. For example, and by that I mean if you say you're this kind of an investor, we'll analyze your portfolio and look at your trades and say, well, actually, no, you're not, or you're behaving more like this. And that can be very revealing to people to find out, okay, this is the way I've really been behaving, or a confirmation that you are behaving well.
So where does the expert issue come in? Where does the issue come in where I am, you know, where I am a, again, use me as I'm in the system, right? I'm not professional. I'm just, you know, the average guy that's going in to invest. And am I going to be getting advice or giving advice to others somehow through my, you know, my research? Or am I going to get can I get advice from other people?
You mean by using our site?
Yeah.
Absolutely. You can subscribe to people. You know, you can see when their opinions change. You find, again, you use the tools to find people who are like-minded. And you, by the way, you can do the inverse. You can find people that are exactly the opposite of you, which can be useful too. So you can find people who are the most unlike-minded as you are,
but
sometimes
so,
people find that valuable too. But the point is you find them, and then you can either just shadow them, watch what they do in terms of their opinions, or you can reach out and interact with them yourself. And we get out of the way, and you can share opinions.
So you are, you know, you're giving advice through your analytics, through your proprietary, whatever you exactly want to call it here, but some kind of a advice module, right?
Correct. We have it's pretty sophisticated technology. It uses it's a combination of fuzzy logic and price history and correlation. And what we can do is we can take out the spurious data that is just, you know, spurious correlations. And we really find when we start to backtest this that it's pretty predictive. It, you know, it's not perfect.
I would call you if you were a mutual fund. I would call you a quant shop. That's what I would call you.
That part of it is a quant shop, absolutely.
So you're a quant shop. So therefore, I'm paying you something for that, right?
It's free.
It's free. Everything's free?
Everything's free. It's free. Everything wants to be, data wants to be free these days. You sign up for free and you use these tools for free.
Okay, so everything's free. So now I go and there's lots of people that are giving advice, lots of people that want advice. You know, just let's leave it at that, whoever exactly the number is. And I can get information through these quantitative information that you provide. So I guess the question I have, and I'm trying to put this delicately, not to you. I'm not saying it to you delicately. I'm saying it to the world delicately, okay? Why do I care what anybody else thinks about this position or not? Because I can't really – first of all, let's ask that question. Why do I care?
Well – I'm not sure. It's possible that you don't. But if you could see, and I mean this in a rhetorical way, or if I could, let me just make it true, and I'll just say, if I'm about to push the button on an investment, but I had the opportunity at low cost in terms of time and effort to see what people who had scores, who were scored on their predictive ability, their alignment with me temperamentally and in other respects as an investor, and I could see what they thought and why they thought it, I'd probably look at it.
But you're going to be working with hobbyists.
Joe the plumber, it's you said we're a quant shop. In some ways we're a quant shop, in other ways we're totally fundamental. There are people out there who make fundamental observations.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll use a Joe the plumber metaphor of sort of a real but not real person.
Mm-hmm.
There's a grain farmer somewhere in North Dakota who hangs out with the other grain farmers and is just hanging out, and they talk about Monsanto, for example, and
right.
say, you know, those Monsanto chemicals, they jump the shark, or whatever grain farmers say the equivalent of. You know, they're just not...
right, they jump the combine.
They jump the combine, exactly. Ed, you buying those Monsanto? No, I'm not either. Well, guess what? There's a short.
There's a short, or... That's some pissed off grain farmers because they didn't get the price they wanted from Monsanto. Or there's some people that are just emotionally attached to something and they want something to happen because they own Monsanto. Or I can give you 100 different things. How do I know this is unbiased?
You don't. And it's the track record and it's a combination of the track record, which cannot be hidden, and the verbal reasons, which we don't want to hide, you know, the point, you know, and it's up to you to look at the investors who have the track records and the matching to your, you know, your way of doing things, and then combine as well our analytics and what those are saying about the stocks and the tools of your choice. I mean, we're part of a balanced breakfast here. I mean, there's a lot of things you probably ought to be doing than just using Interate or just using any one way. We think that we're a tool that a lot of investors have been looking for.
You know what I would love? I would love to take what you're doing. I don't know all of it, to be honest with you, but what we're talking about, okay? Take what you're doing and package it with I'm going to throw this. I haven't thought this out, okay? So just go with me here, and it may sound silly, but, you know.
We're starting a business. Okay.
We're starting a business.
Yeah.
I'd like to take what you're doing and overlay it with professionals. I hope it doesn't piss anybody off that I'm kind of trying to. I have this really big concern. I told you before about this whole idea of mixing my social the social aspect of hobbyist in the markets getting my information. That doesn't mean that they don't know what they're doing. That doesn't mean they're not a lot smarter than me, by the way. I'm not suggesting that, but I have a concern where I can't tell who is telling me the truth or not. Not whether or not, by the way, the analysts are totally screwed up and wrong to begin with either. I'm not suggesting that, right? But I'm just kind of trying to figure out where I get my data from that's the cleanest data, first of all, that doesn't have any overlays that are biased. So that's first of all. Second of all, I would love to see, like with the Covestor or any of these other things, but what you're doing, to take the professionals. I mean, wouldn't it be kind of cool if you can have professionals? Because right now the only benchmark for professionals is return, right? I mean, pretty much. I mean, you could use Sharpe ratio, you could use risk-adjusted return, you could use this. I mean, I'll pick on this whole Ken Huebner thing again, which is like really aggravating me to no end. I don't know if you've seen Ken Huebner's mutual funds lately, the CGM funds.
No, I haven't.
They're abysmal. They're horrifying. They're the most unbelievable, ungodly thing that you've ever seen. And this guy, a month and a half ago, was basically put on a pedestal by Cramer, put on the front, I think it was the front page, of Barron's as the best.
Oh, I did, yeah.
The
yes,
best.
Okay.
I got to pull this up. I'm telling you, I got to pull this up right now as we're talking, because I looked at something last week. He's got a few funds. His main fund is a CGM Focus Fund. And by the way, smart guy, no question. I'm not taking anything away from him, and this has been a very difficult market for everyone, okay?
Right.
But the fact
right.
of the matter is that when you look at the CGM Focus Fund and you look at, kind of where it is in terms of the returns year-to-date, and we know the markets have been bad. It is horrifying. I mean, we're talking about year-to-date, down 38% year-to-date, give or take a dollar, okay? But what's really scary to me is the real estate fund year-to-date is down 37%, but... The real estate fund, I'm going to read you the top holdings of the real estate fund, and you know investments a bit. Tell me if this is a real estate fund. You ready? Arch Coal, Peabody Energy, Consol Energy, Cleveland Cliffs, Freeport McMoRan, Digital Realty Trust, I'll give you that, Boston Properties. Is that what you would consider as the top holdings of a real estate fund?
No, I don't think so.
Something's out of whack, right?
Yes, it sounds like he's chasing ROI, or I mean, Gary said it again. He's chasing something other than...
Right, no, he's a commodity. He's a commodity fund. Now, here's what's really unbelievable. Here's the thing that really bothers me, okay? And again, I'll just kind of end on this point here. But if you look at the return in October on this real estate fund, we're talking about from $31 a share down to $19. I mean, that's frightening to me. I mean, really frightening. I'm not kidding. That really is frightening. From a guy who gets the front page. Now, I'm not saying this out of jealousy. I'm not. I'm saying this out of absolute disgust. Five-star Morningstar rating. Because this guy was an oil and a commodity bull for all these years. And by the way, I don't know if you noticed this, but commodities and oil did well for a while there.
Well, but you know, our technology would have kept you away from that guy's fund. If you had said, I'm interested in real estate, our technology is capable of, I said, you know, speak with forked tongue. Our technology sees the inappropriateness of what's, you know, what's going on here. Which is
horrifying.
Necessary.
It's horrifying. It's horrifying. I mean, it's terrible.
It's horrifying, but it's a useful thing to have.
Right. No, I agree with you. But this is the kind of thing I'm talking about. It would be kind of cool to link up some. You know, I understand the quant and the matching and all that, but I'm saying it would be kind of interesting to have maybe an additional component that has professionals, people that live, breathe, and eat this stuff, involved as one of the potential match in there. It can't hurt, right?
Oh, no, absolutely. We're reaching out to bloggers. We're reaching out to professionals. We think that this approach can work. We're starting with you know, Joe the farmer or whoever he is, but this scales all the way up.
Yeah.
I'm just
really concerned these days of taking advice from anybody. And by the way, I'll include myself in that batch, okay? Just be really careful who, if you're listening to this, be super careful who you're taking advice from, what the bias is, why they're, you know, recommending something. Is it something they hope? We talked about Garmin before. I mean, Garmin was another stock that was obliterated over the last 12 months, okay? And the thing is that with Garmin, is somebody recommending Garmin because they like it, they want to see it go up? I mean, you know, you listen to the TV and watch the news. I mean, why are they saying what they're saying? And I just want to make sure that, you know, we don't fall into a trap of, because we're at, I think we're pretty close to a point of, you know what? I can't take this anymore. I don't trust myself. As an investor, I've lost too much money. I don't know where to turn, which gives me a tremendous amount of, I become very vulnerable. And then I sometimes, you know what happens with like a relationship, we talk about match.com, you know, then we get on the rebound kind of thing. Okay. And then all of a sudden we fall into the wrong hands, and then we fall into the situation where the advisor who, by the way, I have seen portfolio after portfolio after portfolio come into my office. And I said, did anybody, along the way here, say maybe you should scale back a little bit? No.
Exactly.
I said, are you kidding me?
You're right. And this is what gets us so passionate here at Interate. It just breaks our heart to see that happen. And a human advisor, you know, people, your firm, others, you know, are very capable of doing that. But a lot of people just make these mistakes. They don't want to spend the $2,000 or they think they can do it themselves. If there are free or low-cost ways to find out, you know, what's appropriate and what's not, we think that's a good thing.
Yeah, and you know, I agree with I wouldn't let the tail wag the dog here when it comes to the fees. And I'm not saying this. I'm not saying this in a biased standpoint. I'll tell you why I say that. Even in my book, I talk about how it's important in a mutual fund to have low cost because you can do long-term history. You can see that low cost correlates to long. You know, the higher the cost, oftentimes. Correlates to the reduced overall return over time. But at the same time, there's something to be said about having a captain on the ship, you know, and not having just indexing. There is far too many. Let me tell you something. There is going to be, this is my prediction, there's going to be a huge, I say that with an H, because somebody recently I always say, okay. It's huge, but there's huge fallout when it comes to mutual funds, 401k plans, and I lump those together because of this. Mutual funds did not afford anyone a bit of diversification through all this. Would you agree?
It's very difficult to do it. You really had to caution. You're right, yes.
And it's 401ks, like 401ks were chock full of mutual funds, if not pretty much only mutual funds. And the choices were limited and pretty much identical to each other, whatever you could choose, except for maybe cash or a bond fund. Mm-hmm. There was no market neutral, generally speaking. There was no negatively correlated. there was no real, again, there's maybe some balance funds in there, don't get me wrong, but there was a little bit in there. But the 401k, which was supposed to be this, you know, America's retirement plan.
Right, right.
Is gone.
There's
going to be a huge fallout here when it comes to the next level of what happened. I mean, what happened? And mutual funds that can only be traded at 4 p.m. in the afternoon, not intraday. Now, whether or not you're a trader or not, it's not the point. But if I see a stock market falling off a cliff, like we've seen it how many times recently?
And you have to sit there and wait till 4, and the next day, who knows what happens?
Yeah, and it'd be nice. That's why ETFs have become so popular. Maybe less understood, maybe more considering, you know, wow, that's a trader. But you know what? John Bogle, bless his heart, you know, the founder of Vanguard Funds, brilliant guy, far richer than I'll ever be, I would say, far smarter than I'll ever be. But John Bogle sat there the other day and told me, at least through the TV he did, okay,
yeah,
you know what? If you're a long-term investor, don't worry about any of this. But the fact is there are people that lost 50% in this market. It takes 100%. How long does it take you to make 100% on your investment if you're just buying an S&P 500 fund? And by the way, if all you want to be is the S&P, whoever made this ridiculousness up that you have to benchmark to the S&P 500, which is total hogwash, that's just something somebody made up along the way. But we use it as like the ultimate of benchmarks, this S&P 500. The fact is that it would take years and years and years for anyone to make back that money that they lost because they just, you know, bought and only were making money in one direction. But I get off this topic.
For many people, there's not enough years left.
Not enough years left, and not enough choices left, and not enough education out there to be right, wrong, right or wrong.
We're in violent agreement.
Yeah, exactly.
We are in violent.
I don't agree with your agreement. No, no, but it's really a very sad thing. Yeah, no, it's a very sad thing. It's really it's very troubling to me that there's been such a. I think that there's a tremendous amount of trust that's been lost in all this, and that it's going to be very hard-pressed to get back. And unless somebody does something quickly to really deal with some of these issues that are really important, yes, banking and credit lines and, you know, dealing with the LIBOR issue and all that, there's no question that's important from a big picture. But at the same time, there needs to be somebody saying, you know what, Mr. 401k plan, hey, thanks for taking our company plan that has, you know, $380 million in it. Did anybody think about maybe adding a market neutral fund inside the fund and recommending that would be a good idea? No. Yeah.
Right.
Exactly. I mean, just and all these mutual funds that are really just closet indexers that charge 1.5% a year should be taken out back and publicly tarred and feathered.
Exactly, and they're just taking advantage of people's just unfamiliarity with the system. HR hands them the packet. You check the boxes and move on, and it's just they're just cleaning up on people, and it annoys us no end to see that happen.
Well, I tell you again, I think that I'm still not totally sold on the absolute. Now hear me out here on the absolute social investing aspect. Okay, you add a few different things there because you told me you just did, right? You have the quantitative side of it, you have the magic side of it, all, but the straight up social aspect of just. Let's meet up for coffee and have an investment club and I'll talk about it. You know, let's say this. The ultimate online investment club is one of these, maybe not yours. I'm not talking about yours in particular.
No.
But I'm saying that that's what these social sites really are, the social investing sites.
Yes, they are.
And that's what I have a big problem with.
Us too. That's why we started the company.
All right, good. Good. So how do people get to your place?
Inner8.com, INNER, and the number 8.com.
What is 8? What is the number 8? What's the deal?
The reason for that is one of the things you do in our site, in addition to putting in your profile information, is you build a circle of like-minded investors. And we found, and this is before we even named the company, we found that when you got to 6, 7, 8, 9 in your circle, things really started to happen for you. You really started to have variety. You started to, pretty much any stock you thought of, through the web of people and the stocks they ranked, you wouldn't be too far away from an opinion that would be useful and relevant to you. And so it a circle of 8 people was about the right number. And it's a Fibonacci number for the quants among us. And we thought, heck, you know, it works. It's a good name for a company, Inner8.
So it has nothing to do with that movie about the inner circle and being part of the inner circle and...
It's just your own. You build your own circle of, and eight is arbitrary. I mean, you can build. You know, some people are going to already building hundreds. We've got a few people in there that have created links and with lots of investors, but that's their choice.
Yep.
What we recommend is that you stick to like-minded investors or people who are completely the opposite of you, which can be useful, and go from there.
So, what is your if you don't have a business model that is all about subscription model? What how are you making money? I mean, you're going to make money somewhere. Well, you're not just the ultimate altruist, right? Or tell me not.
We're just angry. We just want the world to be the idea is to move in the direction you were suggesting, which is to create a product that is useful for professionals, people who want live data feeds that can benefit from our analytics, mixed with live data from the best, you know, performing investors in our community. We're looking at products that are going to, for a fee, do the monitoring that we were talking about that investment advisors can provide. You know, that kind of idea. Looking at, you know, diagnostics, more sophisticated diagnostics of your current situation. You know, how you are invested now. There's a diagnosis aspect to that we can provide some value on. So those are the kinds of things that can be monetized. Then there's the classical monetization that occurs when you have a large community of smart, well-performing people, and that there's monetization that happens there as well.
All right. Well, I encourage people to go check it out, and I thank you, Doug Doyle, for joining me today on the Discipline Investor Podcast.
Thanks a lot, Andrew.
All right. Thanks. Speak to you soon, Bob. Bye-bye.
Bye.
So I guess what we can gather from that is that not all social networking sites are the same. I still have my reservations. I'd like to hear maybe what you have to say about that. I mean, have you had any experience with any of these social networking sites? And it, you know, seems to be something that maybe you like, don't like, have, you know, maybe some mixed emotions or no emotions. Let me know. I always take your emails, and maybe we can even publish them for the next podcast or on the blog, The Disciplined Investor. I mentioned before that we would have some stock picks in this particular episode. What I wanted to tell you was a couple things. First of all, if you remember, if you've been around for a while and you've been listening and you've hopefully you've had the opportunity to get out of Doug, DUG, which is the inverse, two-time inverse pro shares for the oil and gas sector index. And we made a lot of money with that. But if you look at the index itself and look at what's gone on due to this, the concept that, well, the global recession and slowdown has really hit us. And now we have to be concerned that the consumption overall from every commodity and oil is slowing down, and all of a sudden we have the supply-demand equation going in the opposite direction. I mean, think about what we talked about. I mean, let's step back a second. Let's think about what happened. You remember the whole Enron loophole thing and the whole discussion about manipulation by Goldman and Morgan, and you remember how we were really concerned about the Intercontinental Exchange and the Farm Bill, all this good stuff, right? Well, now the same people who were talking about oil going to $200 a barrel are now talking about oil going to $30 a barrel. Hello? What are these people thinking? Do they think, I mean, honestly, it's kind of like, you just got to wonder, I mean, what is going on? I mean, why do they think we're such idiots? So the good news is, there is something going on that we can hang our hats on, though. But it's not going to be this opinion. And what it's going to be is simple. Hedge funds, mutual funds, pension plans are liquidating like you cannot believe. The deleveraging process and liquidating of shares due to the fact that, let's just take a hedge fund, is getting unheard of and unprecedented withdrawals, even though some of them are saying they're not. Citadel said they're not seeing any withdrawals and there are no liquidation requirements. But let's take a look at what's really happening. We're seeing massive sales, block trades left and right happening when it comes to oil and gas. Why? Many of these hedge funds, again, a hedge fund could do anything, but there's been a lot of buildup of the oil and gas players and stocks inside of hedge funds for a long time. What happens now is they need to be able to meet their liquidations of their shareholders, and they can't do it under normal conditions. Under normal conditions, what they would do is they would go to their bank account and they would get the money through a loan, a credit line, or some other kind of cash infusion. There would be new money coming in, and they would meet the withdrawals by that method. Well, that's not happening now. There's no credit available for most of them. So what they have to do is go out and sell shares in order to meet the withdrawal demands. Wow. Isn't it interesting that it's happening right at the end of the quarter? And what's happening is we took a position in DIG, D-I-G. A couple times in the strategy lab, we got stopped out of it. But in our real portfolio, the Disciplined Investor Managed Growth Strategy, we did not get stopped out. As a matter of fact, we bought it down at about 20, I think it was 24 and a half. If that's, I think that's the number, maybe 25. Anyway, we bought a position about 4% and doubled it at about, bought it at about 29, I think, and then doubled it at about 25, let's call it. So our average cost is somewhere about 27. And now we're up about 12, 13, 14% on it in about a week. I think this is the buy of a century. Think about it for a second. There is a lot of scuttlebutt and talk about how no longer consumption is going to be such a big issue when it comes to oil and gas. Come on. We're still going to have significant amounts of consumption. OPEC, if nothing else, will be coming out, I believe, this week and saying they don't want oil prices to be this low. They don't want to see it sub 70. They're going to keep the prices up. They can't have this. No, it is not going to be as much of a problem as most people think. We're not going to see $30 oil right now. No, no, no. $145 oil, $200 oil was ridiculous. $100 oil is reasonable right now if you consider the demand. There is still significant demand, whether it's in the emerging markets such as India or even in China and in the entire Asian region or in the Americas. Whether or not we're going to become independent or not is really not the issue right now. What is the issue is consumption is still there. Yes, it may have slowed down. It is not a 50% slowdown as we saw the dramatic increase. I mean, we are seeing parabolic moves on the way up and the way down. Go take a look at a chart of DIG. Two times pro share correlated to the oil and gas index. What I like about this so much is everybody has said they've had it. They can't believe there'll be any more exploration from the drillers, if you will, and that everything about oil is bad. I think there is a low point in terms of sentiment right now, and there's a great opportunity there. Steel, by the way, although we're not recommending steel right now, but steel was seeing the same kind of problem because of construction, the automakers and all that. So I think that when you look at those two things, and put them side by side, I believe there is a slowdown and clearly a problem when it comes to steel, but different. It's kind of like food commodities. And we're starting to look at some of the agricultural stocks again and the food commodity companies and maybe even an ETF, symbol DBA is what we're going to look at. But something that I think is really a wise thing and trying to pick these things off the bottom. There'll be huge volatility, huge with an H, whoever, everybody makes fun of me when I say huge, whatever I say with a Y. but my New York accent, I guess, is coming through here. But I think there's great opportunity when it comes to some of this oil and gas play right now. Be careful, though, because it does swing pretty wildly. And instead of getting the two-time, you can possibly get the one-time multiple on the pro shares or other indices or just buy oil outright. But I'd rather buy the stocks inside the index. I think it's a much better play right now. The second thing is we still like Microsoft a lot. I think Microsoft is a great opportunity. And I think Microsoft has a tremendous amount of money still sitting around in their coffers, if you will, that they're looking to do share buybacks on their own shares. They raised their dividend. But early last week on Monday or Tuesday, or actually the week before, we started to look into Yahoo at a price about 11 and a half or so, 12, and say, you know, what's going on with Yahoo? Is Yahoo going to get picked up? Well, we saw this, you know, decent number with Google this week. We saw Steve Ballmer, thank you, by the way, Steve Ballmer, come out with an announcement that Yahoo may be looking like it's still in play by Microsoft, and it pushed Yahoo up nicely. I think that we have close to about a 15% profit or so inside the Disciplined Investor Managed Growth Strategy, as well as Horowitz & Company portfolios in Yahoo in just last week, because it does look like Yahoo is oversold dramatically. I mean, dramatically. And finally, I'll mention to you that, you know, we are still continuing to have a hedged portfolio, and I don't think we're going to drop that for some time. That's the one thing that's really been saving us. And we've really, through all of this, through the whole, this whole, you know, global shutdown and this global catastrophe, our portfolios have held in there solid, haven't lost any money to speak of, negligible if anybody's portfolio has lost any money. I mean, maybe, you know, 0.5% or 1% at maximum. But what I do like, I'm starting to like again, are some of these stocks that have been just totally obliterated. And when you look at some of them, you have to wonder if they're just going to go out of business or what's going to happen. I said this about preferred stocks a few weeks ago. Again, making it easy on you, check out the ETF, PGF, I believe is the preferred stock index in an ETF version. Interesting play there if you think about that. If these companies don't go bankrupt again, you have a great opportunity. So there's a hodgepodge of some positions. I still like things like Thortech, T-H-O-R. Really liking Chatham. Chatham is, they make dandruff shampoo. I mean, you know, dandruff doesn't go away no matter. As a matter of fact, it probably gets worse in these kind of situations. But, you know, they make Selsun Blue, and they also make a variety of other products that you'll find in, you know, Walgreens or Publix or A&P or Walbaum's or whatever else, ShopRite, whatever it is that you're shopping. You'll see their products from Chatham. I think it's a great opportunity. And FCN, what's interesting here is that they are a player in the area of basically lawsuits and claims against financial institutions that do wrong. Now, I have a pause there because they obviously are going to have work over the next 10 years. They're going to have a backlog, and I think there's a great opportunity there for that company. So check those out, and we'll make sure to put links to those on our website and thedisciplinedinvestor.com. And in the show notes for this week, we'll have that list as well. And then you need to see some of the things I put out. I put out, I think, about 30 different charts that were just showing, like, I just cliff dives and some of the indices from last week. I may update this week as well. I think it's interesting to take a look at those. So make sure to wander over there. And if you haven't signed up for Twitter yet, Andrew Horowitz, because you'll get links automatically. And any updates that happen on the blog or the podcast, you'll get automatically to your Twitter account, okay? With that in mind, I don't have much more to say. Make sure that if you are interested in checking, seeing me and meeting me, and I'm interested in meeting you in Washington, D.C., that you write to us at askandrew@thedisciplinedinvestor.com. And finally, if you haven't had the opportunity to check out our virtual tour, 14 minutes of how we manage money, and if you're interested in having us manage money, go on over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com and just click on the link, and I'll put that in the show notes, and you can check out the 14-minute virtual tour of how we manage money and how we're actually beating the S&P by about 28% right now. So with that, we're going to sign off, and I want to say thank you again. I hope you're well. If you need anything, please don't hesitate to write me. And until next time, have a very safe week. Hedge is the word for the week. Hedge is the word that you need to stick by this week and make sure you have sell stops. Promise me that you're going to do that. I'll see you soon. This is Andrew Horowitz. Bye-bye.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contain forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor regulated by the SEC. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.